Today's daf is daf mem dalet, our last day of Perek HaMafkin and Bava Metzia. And we're going to go through the transition into a Zahav today. But we're holding a mem gimel amid beis at the Eilek HaMishnah, achoshev lishloach yad b'pikadon. Until now, we were defining what does pikadon consist of. But now the question is, how does one go about doing it? It's something else. So Beit Shammai says, look, when you're going to do shlichut yad, the statement in front of witnesses that this is your intent is sufficient. So if you're just choshev lishloach yad b'pikadon, that is already an assertion of shlichus yad. You don't have to actually have done it. Then the question is, what is it that you were supposed to have done, to be mechaser or to use it? So those are issues that we had earlier. Even though one would think, the lemaisa makes a lot of sense. Because remember that the inyan of shlichus yad, we came out as a chiddush of the Torah. Because it's not necessarily gezeila, it's not necessarily she'ela on the whole thing. So that what it comes to tell us is that it changes the nature of the relationship. I mean, the nature of the relationship of Shmira, you would think, indeed, is very easily changed by saying in front of witnesses, I don't care about this guy's thing anymore. I mean, so at that point, he would be mabatel as dinim of Shmira, and then he can no longer take the turim that are given to him as the shomer. It's not a crazy thing at all to say that the commitment to be shaleir wayad is sufficient. And indeed, Beit Shammai says at that point, he becomes chayev because he can no longer swear that in lo shalach yadav in lachad re'eil. So then he would even be chayev on onasim. Whereas Beit Hillel says, no, that's not true. You cannot be mevato by statement the relationship. And it's eino chayev at shishlach bo yad, im lo shalach yadav in lachad re'eil. Now, if there were no act, we saw this earlier, but here's the formal statement in the Mishnah. If there were no act to do the shlichut yad that affected the entirety of the chayfetz, so you didn't pick it up, you weren't making shafan avayat the case before the animal. So even though you made use of it, you may get into other issues. You may get into the issue of gezela. Let's say you opened up now a tap and you let out some wine. Okay, so you stole that wine. Or you stood on top of it. Maybe you're a shoyal. But you have not yet done the act of shlichut yad because there was never really anything that was done to the chayfetz as a whole. So even if you bent over the chavit and you didn't open up a tap and you let out wine from the top of the chavit, but bending over and not lifting is never considered to be anything that affects the item. In any halach, it's not called b'shicha, it's not called hutzah for Shabbos, it's nothing. So for all intents and purposes, you took out a revias without having done anything to the rest of the wine. So then if afterwards, obviously not at the time that you're moving it, you slipped and broke it, but if afterwards now it was nishbara, in a mishalim el revi'it, you pay for the revi'it that you took. Higbiyan, yet if you lifted it up and in order to take that revi'it, v'natalim el revi'it, that is an act of shlichus yad, then you're chayav on the whole thing, no matter what. So then, if it's nishbara, mishalim demei kula. Of course, it's a little bit strange, according to the way that Beit Shammai is learning, because, I mean, the way Rabbi Shmuel understands it, if you're shaler bo yad and you replaced it, so then it would no longer be a problem because you don't need dat balim and you've reconstituted the relationship, we said. So how in the world would that fit in with somebody who just made a statement? I mean, making a statement is clearly, he returned it because it's still where it was. But interestingly enough, that's not really true, as the Rosh Hash points out. Because where it was means where it was, not just physically, but where it was in terms of the relationship. If you're still eimed b'diburcha, and your intent is not to give it back by leaving it where it is, so then you're still involved in a shlichus yad and you haven't returned it, that's all. It's just that Beit Shammai is changing the meaning of the need for an act. But everything else remains the same. So whatever defines shlichus yad, we would then have the same machlokas as we had up until now. Says the Gemara Binah immediately. What is the basis to the machlokas? How to define shlichus yad? The Tanur Rabbanan al kol devar pesha. Beit Shammai says, well, what do you mean al kol devar pesha that we talk about over here? Asher yashin olim yishalim shinayim l'rei. It must mean on a davar of pesha. It's not a statement of pesha. It's sufficient. You can no longer say that lo shalach yadavim lachad reyo because there was a devar pesha. So Beit Shammai omrim alam yitshechayeh. Does that not show you that even if it wasn't done, it was nonetheless shlichus yad? Well, it's all very nice, but you didn't read the whole pasuk. I mean, it says im lo shalach yado mim lachet reyehu in the introductory pasuk. Last I heard, the definition of the word shalach yado is that an act took place that was measurable, not in your mind, but in your hand. And isn't that the main point of shlichut yad? Whether things were done mechanically or whether they're done through mind. That's the issue. So how can you say that we're gonna look at the Dvar Pesha when the Torah goes out of its way to say that the shvuah is in terms of a mechanical act? Amalan Beit Shammai LeBeit Hillel. Well, I mean, what are you going to do without Kol Devar Pesha? Amalan Beit Hillel LeBeit Shammai. I don't care. I'll tell you what we'll do in a minute. But there's no way, once the Torah was mechayev you to look at this mechanically, there's no way that Kol Devar Pesha could possibly mean that it would be sufficient without a mechanical act. Now, what it means, we'll explain in a second. But alok var nemar im lo shalach yadav im lechet reyev. So again, ma tamud omar ha kol dvar pesha. She yochol ein li ela hu. I might have thought of hadn't said ha kol dvar pesha, that it's only possible to do shlichut yad yourself. But you cannot do shlichut yad by asking somebody to take it for you. So say, tell to your eved, or to your shliach. So over there you would say, well, although an act was achieved, but it was only achieved through the control of your mind. So that you might think would not be shlichut. Yeah, therefore the Torah has to add, I'll call devar pesha, as long as that physical act was achieved. It doesn't mean that it needs to be achieved directly by your yad, but it does mean that your dibur could cause it. But what happened needed to happen. Not, it needed to be a thought to happen. Now, Beit Shammai never addresses the question that Beit Hillel addressed to him, which is, and what about kol devar pesha? I mean, excuse me, what about the Mlo Shalach Yadot? He doesn't explain how Kol Devar Pesha. So apparently, it's not a problem for Beit Shammai to say that Kol Devar Pesha is defined as the intent for Shalach Yadot. Because I'm not saying it's a stira, I still need to define what the Devar Pesha was. What is the Pesha that I was bedaber? Shalach Yadot, min lechet reyehu. But the intent is sufficient. So it's not, to me, it's not a stira the way it is to you. To you, intent is irrelevant. This is not a mind issue. This is an act issue. See,
why is it even
a machshava?
Why is it machshava?
Yeah, you weren't here for our exciting Mem Aleph daf. We discussed the whole point of the interrelationship of the nature of shlichut yad. But, all the way back in Gan Eden, the question is whether the world is meant to be a mechanical world, which was the Hotzah from Gan Eden. He looked at it because Peri Shlach Yado. Or it's meant to be a world as it was in Gan Eden, in which things were controlled to that. The cause and effect was defined as intent and achievement through the intent, which is Aristotle's final cause. So in that sense of cause and effect, machshava is the issue. It's just that it's the dibur that puts that machshava into the world and, you know, allows it to have impact. But the point is, it's the power of mind expressed. So the power of mind expressed, we call machshava, it's called machshava. It's dafka, a very beautiful way of saying what you want to say. I'm talking about a world of a different type of cause and effect than you're talking about. So it's the world of mind. It's not specifically the world of speech. But even HaKadosh Baruch Hu utilizes speech as Santa Matra. Hita et hachavit. That's what speech means. It doesn't mean necessarily sound. It's obviously. Hita et hachavit. Omar Rabba loshonu ela nishbara. Now, notice that what we're talking about over here is if after you set it down. So then it broke. But if the wine went sour after you took out that revius, you would be paying for it. Because over there, you're Mishalim Eskulamai Tamek Giri Didei Hu Dehanulam. It's the fact that you allowed the air in that made this wine go sour. And that is as if you went ahead and soured the wine with your own arrow. So that's not the point. There, it would be considered a direct cause. He could be of a Natal Emen Revi'id. So says Shmuel, look, we're not talking about over here actual Natal Emen Revi'id. I mean, the truth is, you don't need to take the Revi'id out. If you were magbia it in order to take a revi, so because we don't, the shlichut yad is not what it achieved in the end. It was the fact that you actually took it. So in other words, Shmuel, that shlichut yad does not need an actual chisaron. Obviously, this is a third level. We have the question whether the machshava per se helps, or whether you need to go all the way to the actual event as it affects the chayfetz. Or this middle stage, as Shmuel is saying, the act needs to have done, but the impact on the chayfetz may not be noticeable subsequently. But what you did, you took it to take. So in the same way, if you picked it up in order to be gozel it, it's still exactly where it was. Nothing disappeared. Everybody would agree in that case. Obviously, that is the ultimate act. And despite the fact that it's still in your house, and that's where it always was, you took it, the whole thing. So too, says Shmuel, it's sufficient to take it in order to be shaleach v'yad. So does that mean that he holds that shlichut yad does not require chisaron, so that what you did now affected the entire chefetz? No, says Shmuel. It may well be that shlichus yad does need to have an actual impact on the entire chefetz. But look, there's two ways of looking at this. But you're looking at it as an intent to take that was expressed in the pickup of the object. How about if we look at it like this? You took it. What do you mean I took it? Still in the barrel. Of course, still in the barrel. Because where is the best place for me to keep the wine that I want? In a cup that's going to be open and ruined by the end of the day? We're in the barrel. So obviously, I want now to use the rest of the barrel as the support for my cup. So now it's even worse. My cup is in the barrel, which I took. And now I'm using the whole barrel as a shoel. So now I'm having the whole thing thrown to sea. For part of this, it's like the ultimate extension of the different elements that we had before. You might be a shoel shalom yidaz, might be a shoel, might be a shaleyav yad, might be a goslin. Over here, we could view it as you were Neitel, and you were Gozel the Revius, and now you're a Shayot on the rest of it, so you'd be Chayav on Onsin no matter what. And maybe that's the chat. So Neitelet, Tadia Chavit Kula, Basis, La Revi'it. So I'm using the entire barrel as a base for the Revi'it that's in the barrel which I'm taking. Boy Rav Ashi, would you go so far as to say the same thing by coins? Let's say you took a wallet, you pick up a wallet, in order to take out one dinner from the wallet. There's a whole wallet of coins. And now you leave the dinner in the wallet. So, I mean, is this a logic only applied to literal things where you really need the liquid around it as a support? So, chamra, udalo minter alag of chamra. I mean, you can't keep wine anywhere else but with wine. Once you're going to expose it to the air, so it's going to start going bad. Avozuza, I mean, you take out a dinner, you can always hide the dinner somewhere. Oduma shining it to the arnakim and to the dinner. Or do we say even here, look, there's no question that a person would rather keep coin, not as an isolated coin that he puts under his mattress, would rather keep it in a container of coins, which is kept in a different level in the Tiruta. That's already taken. So you can see we might extend even this idea of Shmuel even to a case like that. So we would consider it to be a Shoel on the wallet and a Gazlan on the coin. Fascinating. Hadron alach hamafkid. Well, this halakha parak needs something of an introduction. We're getting into some rather complex issues over here. We know that the dinim of kinyanim are, tzumachlokas of the Gemara, which we'll see later on, are defined as mitaltalin, so any type of commodity that is chattel, and not stuck in a place or defined as real estate. You can be kinda that chattel only through an act of mashiach, which would include hagabah as well, cases, a certain case, misirah, but what we call that general sense is taking it for yourself, some act, formal act of acquisition. Without that act of acquisition, a sale is just an agreement. Now, you would think, and this is your natural way of looking at things, because the way we're brought up, that once you pay for a thing, it's yours. But that's not true. Once you pay for a thing, it's not yours. Now, why it's not yours is a machlokas. We'll see the Gemara. Some learn midiraita, it's not yours, and it's only mashiach, and it's kena. Others learn is how we pass, and actually midiraita ma'ot arkonot. So really, as far as the Torah is concerned, if you paid, it's yours. But because this creates very bad circumstances, in which the seller no longer feels responsible for delivery, and therefore will not go out of his way, let's say there's a fire in the warehouse where the things that you bought are stored, he's not going to go out of his way to save your stuff. So we made a takana, you only are kena upon delivery. Okay, so this was one of our takanas of shuk and so on. Money is a desire to buy, but delivery is the close. You want to change your mind? After giving money, you could still change your mind. I mean, you're going to have to go through a rather unpleasant procedure in court and so on, because morally it's not correct, but legally the item is not yours. Now, that would mean that when somebody takes money from you, that does not cause you to be kind of the metaltalin. But when you take metaltalin from someone, that causes him to take possession of your money, correct? That's what it boils down to. In other words, if we view everything as an exchange, so now I'm going to take your cow, and you're going to take my coins. I put the coins in your hand, but I haven't moved the cow in my hand. Then your coins are not yours, and I can change my mind and take the coins back. If I take the cow, now the coins are yours. Now there's another level where you exchange different commodities. So over there, it's not possible to discuss one of them as the money and the other as the commodity. This is a barter. In a barter, we get into a different type of kinyan that is called a kinyan of chalipin. So over there, whoever takes possession first causes the other person to own the other thing, no matter where it is. So that would be the equivalent of mashiach in terms of mos, except that now it works even more powerfully, because wherever that other thing is, it's completely in the other person's rishus. Most, because they're generic, which was, you can't say it's in your rishus, because they owe it to you. The question, where does this get a little bit sticky, is where it's difficult to decide what is the commodity and what is the most. So in other words, let's say you're exchanging gold coins for silver coins. So then what? What do you do then? Is there a commodity and a coin? Are there two types of coins? So again, because we need to peg value, we're going to see the idea of pegging value to a standard later on. There's places where the Torah gives us a particular thing we're supposed to pay. You have to pay chamisha slaim, let's say, repeating on that. Do we peg the value of chamisha slaim to a gold standard? Or do we peg the value of chamisha slaim to a silver standard? Well, I mean, it makes a tremendous difference, because then in terms of the kinyanim, whatever the standard would be considered to be the coinage relative to something which would be pegged in terms of it, which would then be the commodity. So the relationship of commodity to coinage is a relative one, right? It's possible for something in one exchange to be the coin to a commodity, whereas in another exchange, it becomes the commodity to a coin. Now, the question of how to define that, there's a number of issues that we would need to define. Perhaps the fact of its universal evaluation, its hashivas, is the thing, so that the world was on a gold standard for a long time. Or there's a different way of pegging value as the coinage. And that would be very similar to the modern idea of what would define the exchange value of such a thing. Not its ultimate hashivas, but rather how easy it is to exchange that thing for other things. Which would boil down to the idea that ultimately anything that people are willing to accept as that which flies freely between different economies, that thing becomes now the agency of exchange, which is called money. Versus anything else, which relative to it would not be as easily exchanged, but would be more close to barter, that thing would be called the commodity. So in other words, that would mean if you're exchanging rubles for dollars, so then the dollar would be the coinage, and the ruble would be a commodity. That's how we would look at it. And we're going to get into this problem, even this, you could see where this would take tremendous nafkaminas. You're doing an exchange of currencies at a bank. At which point can you change your mind? Which currency is a commodity? Which currency is the coinage? You're cashing in your pennies for a silver dollar. At which point do you take the pennies back? At which point is the dollar yours? You're buying gold with silver coins. When it comes to the exchange of Meiser Sheni, you're not allowed to put peyrot as the thing that you're going to be mechalal onto. Peyrot are the things that you're mechalal onto a coin. But suppose you have a money which relative to another coin is like peyrot. Can you use that coin to be mechalal onto the other coin but not the opposite direction? Where it gets really, really sticky is in questions of rebit. You borrowed money. Now, you're going to pay back, let's say you borrowed gold coins. Now you need to pay back. Can you pay back gold coins? Because you're not allowed to borrow commodity for commodity because of fluctuation in commodities. You may end up paying back gold at a higher exchange rate than when you borrowed, and that's similar to rebit that Chazal answered, exchanging commodities because of that. So now the problem is, what type of things can I not borrow in order to pay back in that same medium, because it would be sa'ah, it's called. So can I pay back with a different type of coinage? Do I translate it into some ultimate value? All of these issues are dependent in how we define upfront the concept of money. So what is considered to be tiva and what is considered to be commodities, which in the general sense are called peyrot. When we say peyrot, what we mean is goods. Always. Baal ochel peyrotea means that which is produced by the things, the produced goods. So the concept now of the wealth that is produced, that's peyrot. It may be in terms of something rather abstract. And then the concept of an agency of exchange, which is an abstraction for any type of wealth, that's called tiva in terms of the Gemara. It's the shape. Okay. So now we've got time. Yeah. Tiva is the where the concept of matveya, but the coinage as opposed to coins. So now it says the Feinstein and Helike Perek, our president can give us again now that we can formally begin, and it's okay, otherwise we might have just ended up sitting here. Hazahav koneet hakesef, but hakesef eino koneet hazahav. So now the first statement in the Mishnah is gold is not the standard. Gold is a commodity. Kesev, not surprisingly, is kesev. So silver now is the agency of exchange. Therefore, when I, the buyer, so to speak, because that's how we have to look at it. In other words, if we're exchanging gold for kesev, zahav for kesev, what we're really doing is buying gold. That's how we have to look at it, because gold is a commodity. So the moment that the buyer of the gold picks up the gold, the sale is completed. Now the other person owns his kesev. But taking kesev is not going to be kona de zahav. And the buyer of the zahav, again, we are abstracting this in a remarkable way, right? The guy doesn't even realize what he's doing. All he wants to do is cash some coins into different coins. He has no idea what's going on. But if it gets to court, then it has to be abstracted. So the abstraction is, you are not exchanging coin. You were trying to buy gold. That's what happened. And when you try to buy a commodity, paying for it's not enough. When you buy a commodity, delivery. So when you took delivery of the gold, again, this is highly abstract.
Each one guy says I'm buying silver.
Yeah, exactly. Well, no, neither of them think they're buying. That's interesting. In other words, people don't have the technical sense of buying and selling. They think they're changing money. They use that word. They think they're doing chalipin of some type, but they're not, because you can't do chalipin on defined valued coins. There is no chalipin on coinage. So therefore, we have to look at it as buying and selling. Okay, so who's buying and who's selling? This is the way we need to look at it. It's not equal. Somebody is buying with money the commodity that the other person has. This is It's just remarkable how distant this is from what a person thinks is going on, and how incredibly sophisticated the abstraction becomes here in needing to define properly things that people didn't even think about a few hundred years ago. Okay, so we'll see. We're going to talk about that. Okay, so Zahav buys Kesev because it's a commodity. But Kesev does not buy Zahav because it's a coin. Hanechoshet, same thing is true about the relationship of copper coins to silver coins. The copper is also considered to be a commodity vis-a-vis the Kesev. Wow, now that's interesting, because what does that tell you? It tells you that we're not looking at the difference between coinage and commodities in terms of its hashivut at all. We're looking at it in terms of its, what's known as its fluidity. In Gemara terms means its harifut. Harifut means the sharpness with which it can be exchanged. We talk about the chidekel. Its waters are harifim, chadim, sharp, flows easily, it's free flowing. Yeah, so it's the same idea, harifut. So how quickly does it flow?
Or velocity. Who's much longer to tame the Tigris than the Euphrates? It's only the Assyrians who worked out how to get the water.
Excellent, excellent. And that explains that insane machine that they have in Cambridge, which actually is the first economic computer that was actually used water. Before computers, they had this beautiful, they still have it in Cambridge, they show it every once in a while. It's called The Machine. And it's a series of pumps, pipes, valves, in which each valve represents some other element of monetary flow, and they actually use the flow of water to show the difference between raising taxes, amount of money or water that's available, and so on and so forth. It was an early computer. You could actually see the difference in what was happening in the flow of money, depending on all kinds of things: interest rates, taxes, amount of percentage that's being saved, et cetera, et cetera. Beautiful. So okay, so we use indeed for many, many things. We use a borrowed terminology of water really to talk about that, and it turns out to be a very valuable, by the way, I mean mamash, with the same formula that defines the flow of water through a pipe. Exactly the same mathematical relationships defines, for instance, the flow of traffic along an artery. So that, and once they figured that out, it was much, much easier to actually set up algorithms to work out traffic flow and lights and so on and so forth. Until then, it was a matter of guesswork. So over here, we talk about flow, the harifut of a thing, the tiva of the thing, the chashivut of the thing, which is clearly what we're not talking about here, and then the peirot. So those are the terms that we have to remember. So nechoshet is a commodity, and therefore the commodity can buy the money. But the money can't buy the commodity, because money is not kaina. Only mashiach of a commodity is kaina. Now, there's also such a thing as relative money. The same coinage, which is in bad shape, and which is difficult to exchange, ma'ot hara'ot, which now has been canceled by the government. It's no longer the coin. You're going to have to bring it to a special bank in order to exchange it. It's the old medium of exchange. It turns into a commodity. And because of that, it's konotat hayafot. It will now be usable, if you are moshech it, to become now the owner. And the other person then is the one who owns the money, which is the easy to exchange coinage. But the yafot einan konotat hara'ot. Again, because there is no such thing as ma'os or konos. Asimon, koneat ha-matbea. Now, there have been, it's difficult for us to understand the ways of the ancients.
Tell us that those and the others would be the same, both silver.
Yes, even though it would be the same thing, exactly. In other words, we've moved away from the identification of the metallic content to this direct discussion of how easily it moves. Now, for this next piece, it's difficult for us to understand the ways of the ancient, but archaeologists have uncovered these little booths, which apparently, based on old books that have been found, were used for changing costumes. And subsequently, boxes were put in there that were wired up. That this was before they developed the cell phone. People would call people with these boxes that were wired, and they would have tokens called asimons, which they were put in there. So obviously, an asimon is any type of token that doesn't have...
They didn't buy a slot machine.
I don't know. Maybe they did. But, I mean, it was those the costumes that they found on the floor. That was the most exciting part. Okay, so these asimonim, so these tokens, are considered to be, obviously, even though they may have a well-defined worth as a token, but nonetheless, they are considered to be a commodity. And therefore, if you take the token, so then the other person is kind of the matbea. But the matbea, being money relative to the token, will not be konet asimon. Mitaltelin, koninat matbea. And in general, any chattel, as opposed to real estate, will be konet matbea, but a matbea ino konet mitaltelin. Now, this zeh klal doesn't make much sense over here, and indeed, the Rishonim and the Gra take it out. Kol hamitaltelin konim zeh zeh. But what's interesting is that you're not dealing with coinage, even though you may be dealing with clearly defined values. So two people they get together and they have an assessor. And the assessor now goes and gives an exact, a quantification of the value of an item, a pot, and the other person has a pitcher. So now we know exactly what they're worth. They're still not coinage. There's no coinage here. Value isn't coinage, and therefore what we have is commodities. Any commodity can be exchanged.
Even though one's much more popular.
Right, because it's not something that you would walk into your makolet and buy a bottle of milk with. I've tried giving my kids to them dozens of times. They never take it. So all metaltolim can be exchanged for any other, and therefore the first one who takes the first one is the one now that caused the other person to take possession of his thing. This is the entangled particles, basically, of ancient times. So whatever you do to one, is the opposite happens to the other. So ketzad, mashach emenu peirot. So now, to illustrate our Mishnah, let's say in a sale of peirot, which again doesn't mean literally peirot, but you took the commodity. So you picked up the fruit, and you haven't paid. That is irrelevant that you haven't paid. You have to pay. You are the owner, and you owe money. There's no way for you to pull out of this. On the other hand, if you paid, but you never took possession. You could have charota at any time. Aval amru, however, you should know that the Beit Din, however, tells you, and we'll see exactly, is this a Belashon Klola? Is it just a prediction? Is it a statement of moral impact? That we'll see in the Gemara. Mishu para, mianche dor hamabu, umidor haflaga. The one who paid back, if we're talking about paying, the one who paid back the people of the Dor HaMabul, who were so involved in Hamas, and the Dor HaFlaga, who ended up not understanding each other. Hu atid li para mimishenu omid bediburo. He will take his vengeance upon one who was committed to something and then use legalities to pull out. We'll see. Rabbi Shimon Omer, kol shakesev biyado. Yado ala elyona. It's not exactly as you say it. Because according to the Rabbanan, you, if you paid, can still have charata. But that's not true, says Rabbi Shimon. The buyer, once he gives the money, and the other person is still in possession, the seller is still in possession of the commodity, he's got it all. So the only one who can have charata at that point is the guy who's in possession of it all. That's the kol. So he's got the money and the commodity, but the guy who's already not in possession of the money, he cannot change his mind at this point once he handed over the money. So the only one that could then be mitcharet is the mocher. The lokeach cannot be chozer. We'll see what his logic is in the Gemara. The matin,
sorry? Don't pay for you.
The moral is,
don't pay for you.
According to Rabbi Shimon. Matin, Rabbi Shimon Bray. So Rabbi was teaching his son, Rabbi Shimon, the Mishnah, Hazahav, Koneh, et Akesev, and Rabbi Shimon burst out with, Rabbi, Shanita lanu biyaldutecha, Akesev, Koneh, et Hazahav. When you were young, and we were kids, apparently they were still hearing the Mishnah from their Abba when they were old. But when we were kids, it's interesting, continue to teach the Mishnah. Well, when we were kids, you read that Mishnah, HaKesef Koneh Et HaZahav. That's what you said. And now that you're older, now you're teaching us the opposite? A foolish consistency is the hot club in the Medina. So now the Tachzor, it's the Chanel, and it's the HaZahav Koneh Et HaKesef. My gosh, man, are you confusing. So what happened? What exactly was the logic of Rebbe's original formulation of the Mishnah? Fascinating historical insight. In which initially the Mishnah had read HaKesef Koneh HaZahav. And what was changed? Bezeknuto. Well, Bialdutei Savar, when he was young, you know that youngsters usually look at surfaces. You know, when he was young, he thought, gold, what could be better than gold? I mean, gold is choshev. And therefore, it should be the standard, no? So the chashivas define standards. So the gzav, which is chashiv, is considered to be the coinage. Avitiva, relative to the kesev, which is not chashiv, and then the kesev is considered to be the commodity. And, of course, the rule is always that the commodity is kind of the money, not the money kind of the commodity. Either, again, midiraita, or because of the takana of Shema Yomalo, Nisrufu, Chitecha, Baalim. But then, when he got older, Biziknutei Sava, what we should be looking here is ease of flow. And therefore, kaspa, the chorif, that which is now easily, and this was the way the Torah put money in the terms of over la socher. Those were the shkalim that bought the ma'arat ha-machpelah. So that means the easier something is over la socher. What does that mean? Passed to the business. That's what it means. Passes through the business. So that means one businessman is able to pass it to another businessman without any problem. And that is ease of flow. So ease of flow is what should define the tiva. And since kesef is easier to exchange than gold, gold is always a problem. Gold, you go to an expert, then they start checking it, and they're going to give you an exchange. It's like today. You know, you have gold, it's a hassle. It's just stam go in there and use gold the way you would use kesef. So there, the kesef becomes a tiva. Tahava, the low chore, if people will not accept gold that easily. So that's considered to be a peri. And again, the rule is, the peri is kena the tiva. And therefore, he changed the Mishnah to read the way we have the Mishnah, which is the way it was in his old age. Omer Rav Ashi, the truth is, it makes more sense to read the Mishnah the way it would have been read when he was younger. And remember, I mean, Rebbe didn't make up these Mishnayot. Rebbe basically was misadded these Mishnayot. So we should be able to analyze the Mishnah internally and see what is the most reasonable original construction of the Mishnah as it was stated by Rebbe Meir Lechatchila, which now Rebbe is trying to put together, and I think he's making a mistake. Because Ki Yaldoto, it's more mistaber. Because, look, the Mishnah also says, Hanechoshet koneh takesef, okay? Now, think about the construction of the Mishnah. If the original Mishnah was right, and it said that the kesev is considered to be the payroll, then the Mishnah is beautiful, because it's what it's bringing out is that the same thing can be kesev relative to one thing, payroll relative to another thing. That's great. What is the Mishnah doing now? I mean, just basically taking two examples in which the relationships are the same. The zahav to the kesev and the nefasha to the kesev. I mean, so it makes much more sense the way it was done, because then it's a chiddush. Look, there's Yemi Bishem Akaspa Lagabi Dahava Pirahava. If you're going to tell me, the way Rebbe said it, Bialdute, that silver is considered to be, relative to gold, a commodity, so then it would make sense to continue to say, Hanu de Katani, Hanechoshet Koneata Kesev, which means, the Afa Pida Lagabi Dahava Pirahava, even though silver, relative to gold, is a commodity, but relative to copper, the same thing becomes coinage. Now that's brilliant. Because then everything is defined, basically, by its chashivot, its relative chashivot. But if you're going to tell me, the way Rebbe said it in his old age, which is the way we have it, you're telling me that silver, relative to gold, is considered to be coinage. So then I ask you, if even vis-a-vis gold, where the gold is more choshev than the silver is, nonetheless, the only thing that counts is the liquid flow. So it's considered to be tiva. So by nechoshes, it has both values. It's both easily, more easily flowable, and it's more choshes. So you got to tell me that legabi nechoshes is considered to be kesef. Obviously, it's considered to be kesef. The beauty of the original Mishnah is striking. The redundancy of Rebbe's new girsa of the Mishnah is disturbing. So it must be that the Mishnah was originally constructed the way Rebbe had said it over when he was younger. Now he's second-guessing himself. Not a good idea. So that's what I think. If you want to have it the way we have it here, Rich, which is that the kesev is considered to be the coinage, even relative to gold, where the gold is more chashev, so then I ask you, if you're willing to say that even relative to gold, which is more chashev, nonetheless it's considered to be coinage because of the more important weight of charifut to chashivut, so then the gabi nechoshet, which has both weights, it's both more chashev than the nechoshet and more liquid than the nechoshet. Me boy, you got to tell me that. Says the Gemara, I do. I do indeed. It's true. Because the fact is that when you're dealing with money, there's something else that we haven't even thought about. And that something else is the universality of money as opposed to local exchange. And that is something that needs to be taken into consideration. Because look, there are certainly places. You talk about a small town marketplace where people don't have much money. The medium of exchange is copper, not silver. It's rare that people have silver. So you would say to yourself, Sagbet Hamina, that Hani Priti be Atra de Sagoyi inu Harifi Tvei Mikaspa. There are places where people are used to using very small amounts of money. There's very little money that's being exchanged. So over there, there's a lot of supply of copper, a very small supply of silver. And over there, therefore, that becomes more harif, because the flow is standardized locally. So there it becomes harifi tvei mikaspa. You might think that local conditions override the sense of the universality of exchange. And therefore, maybe it would be considered to be tiva in such a location. Kamash malan, that the very fact that it's not universal, that kiven de ikaduch to don lo sagibe, there are places where they will not now utilize nechoshes as easily. Oh, please, you're paying, I'm not going to let you on the bus. What are you going to pay me in chamesh agorot coins? Throw you out of there. So since there are such places, you cannot call that the medium of exchange. So the universality itself becomes important. And that's something that the Mishnah indeed has to teach us over here. So since there are places, the lo sagile, it remains a commodity. So therefore, you have no taina on the construction of the Mishnah. Both constructs make sense. They obviously make sense in different ways, but the Mishnah itself is not internally mochiach like Rebbe's younger version or like Rebbe's older version. Maybe, yeah, certainly possible. Sure. Sure. All they do is they weigh it. Well, you bring in the makolet, they weigh it.
In that case, when you talk about Nehoshah, it's talking about a market that is overwhelmingly barter?
No. There's coins, pennies, but everything is done in pennies and pence. It's the poor people's market. It's a small-town African market. Who's going to use anything else? Now, Rabbi Chiya also holds, after Rabbi Chiya Sovar, that the Dahava is considered to be Tiva, the way Rebbe had it in his youth. How do I know that? Because of Halakha L'maisa, Rav once went ahead, and he was Oziv Didrei Bibartik Rabbi Chiya. He went ahead and he borrowed Dinrei Zohav from Reb Chiya's daughter. And what happened is the price of gold went up before he had a chance to pay it back. And the Sof Yaker Dinre. So he comes to Reb Chiya concerned about what does he do now if he pays back the same amount of dinarim. If they're not coins but commodities, he's going to be paying rebate. So he asked Reb Chiya what to do. So he said, what do you mean what to do? It's my daughter, baby. You pay her nice good coins. He said, just pay her tavin v'tekilin, you know, good quality coins, same coins that you had, now, obviously. So, Yamit Bishlema, that he holds that the tav is tiva havi. If Rabbi Chiya held that the coinage of gold is the standard, like Rabbi held in his childhood, so then indeed it works out fine, a chapter. El Yamit Pira havi, if you would say that Rabbi Chiya was of the opinion that gold is considered to be a commodity, then the whole exchange was usher in the first place, except as being pegged to a medium of exchange. So it needed to be pegged to silver in the first place. And now it would be a sa'ab sa'ah, and that would be asur as ribit, vasur. No, because there is a different thing we didn't tell you. Rav actually was in possession of dinarim at the time, but they weren't easily accessible to him. He just needed this loan temporarily. Just to get older, it was too much of a hassle for him to get into a safe deposit box, but he had it. The din is, if that's the case, kivin da havile dinre, nasika omerle, halveni achiavo bani. I'm waiting, my kid went off with the car keys. So wait until he comes home. That's not considered to be a loan, which is usher in Sa'abasa, because I've got it in the car. Or I can't find the key to the safe. Wait until I find the key to the safe. I'll give it back to you. So we view that as an instant exchange. You keep mine, I'll take yours. I just need to have it in my hand. And therefore, it's not a problem of Sa'abasa. On my rova, hi tanas rabadava tivahavi, here's a braita that also agrees that gold is considered to be the standard of exchange, the way Rebbe did when he was younger, and the way Rebbe Chiya just did, the Tanya. Pruta, here is a list of values of coins. Now watch this. How do we define the pruta when the pruta is used for Kedusha Isha, let's say, as we'll explain, right? So the pruta that the Chazal always talk about is defined as 1/8 of an Isser Ha'italki. So that Italian Isser, cut it into 1/8. Well, that 1/8 is the value of a pruta. L'mayav kamina l'kedusha isha. The iser is defined as 1/24 of a silver dinner. And where is that important? L'mayav kamina l'mekach u'memka. That's important in terms of business. If somebody is going to try to utilize some other type of exchange, then that's going to be cheating, because anything that's well defined, there's no quarter given over there. I mean, you can't take a little bit extra and say, these are the coins I'm using. What is the dinner shel kesev? Oh, now this is interesting. The dinner of kesev is 1/25 of a golden dinner. L'mayin afkamina l'pidyon aben. So that would mean that you have to give 4/5 of a dinner zohav's value to a coin, which is chamisha shkalim. Each shekel consisting of 4 dinner, 20 dinner, those dinarim are each of them 1/25 of the value of a dinner zav. Now, looky here. Because you, if you view the standard as gold, so then it makes perfectly good sense to tell me how much I need to pay for pinyon aben in terms of the standard of coins. So then the Tana would be Mishaer Tana b'midi dekits. Then what you're doing is by definition, that which doesn't fluctuate is the coin. It's the commodities that are fluctuating relative to the coin, not the coin that's fluctuating relative to the commodity. That's the definition of commodity versus coin. But if you're going to tell me that the gold is a commodity, then this is an insane braita. So now you're telling me how much to pay for pidyon aben in terms of a commodity that fluctuates, where the pidyon aben was actually supposed to be paid in tiver. That would be crazy. Mishayer tana b'midi de oker v'zil? So now the tana is going to be telling you, well, there's a commodity that you can use as what, as a standard? I mean, sometimes the coin's going to have to give you change for dinner's off, and sometimes you're going to have to be now adding to the coin. So what a stupid thing to say. Sometimes the coin's going to owe you. Like nowadays, you say it's 125th. Yeah, that's great. That's today. What about tomorrow when it becomes 119th? So sometimes the Kohen owes you the five extra dinner, and sometimes you get ahead. The Mosul Yulukahana. So if the Tana is using gold as the definition of Pinyin Aben, it's clear that he views gold as being the standard, the gold standard. So Ela Shmamina, Tiva Have Shmamina. From here we see clearly that it is indeed considered to be the coinage. And Tanan Hatam, when it comes to the question of exchange of Pidyon Maaser Sheni, what's the rule of Pidyon Maaser Sheni? You can exchange, Torah says, you're going to go up to Yerushalayim, Vitzarta HaKesef B'yadecha, which means that you're allowed to be poda your peirot onto a coin. Then take the coin up to Yerushalayim. Now how about if you've got a lot of silver, which is heavy, and you'd like to exchange these 25 heavy dinarim for one simple dinar zahav? Oh, now we get into the question. If the dinar zahav is coins, and the silver is just an abstract pre, so you're looking at the fruit when you're looking at the silver, so then of course you can always be mechalal the silver onto the coin. But if it's the other way around, the fruit is the gold and the money is the silver, you're never allowed to use the money and be paid a money onto fruit. You could only buy fruit to eat it with the money in Yerushalayim. But you can't do a pidyon of it and then bring the fruit up to Yerushalayim. So this is going to make tremendous differences. Therefore, when Beit Shammai comes along in the Mishnah and says, Lo yaseh adam silaim din rei zahav, a person should not take his silaim and kesev and turn it into din rei zahav. And Beit Hillel are matirim, they say that's okay. Now there's a machlokis over there. How to understand exactly what's meant? Rabbi Yochanan of Reish Lakish, Chad Omar machloket b'selaim al dinarim. Well, the machloket over here is, in terms only of taking the coins, which are the selaim, and being mechal of them onto the dinarim. So Beit Shammai holds that yes, that actually it's the silver, you see, that's the tiva. And it's the gold, which is the peirot, and therefore you cannot make such an exchange. Because you can never be mechalal money, tiva, of Meiser Sheni, onto peirot that are not Meiser Sheni, and now make that the Kedusha. Tiva apira lo mechalalina, never. Whereas Beit Hillel says, no, on the contrary. The kesev is the actual abstract fruit, the pira. The dahava is the money, and therefore you're perfectly within your rights, just like you could take tomatoes and put them onto a silver dollar, you could take silver dollars and put them onto gold. So peira ativa mechalalina. But this one man yomer, the Rabbi Yochanan Reish Lakish, we don't know who yet. Peirot, if you have literally fruit, you want to be mechal the fruit on dinarim. Divrei hakol mechal alina. That's not a problem because the point is it's all relative. You see, in the same way, according to Beit Hillel, what's the din? You could take a coin, which is kesef, so and you could be mechal it onto gold. Now, I mean. I don't know. It looks to me like I'm looking at a coin. So how can I be Mechalonok? Because he's teaching you. It's all a relative abstraction, right? It's an abstraction about relative things. So in the same way that according to Beis Hillel, silver to gold is basically peirot to coin. So too now, it's peira havik. So legabe peira, and nonetheless, that same coin, which you said was itself a peiri, now becomes a coin to be Mechalon peiroton. How is that? Because it's all relative. So the silver relative to a fruit is a coin. Now, therefore, the same thing is true about Zahav. When it comes to Zahav Nami Le Beit Shammai, Afagav the Zahav Lagabi Kaspa Pirav, even though he views the gold as being the pre, vis-a-vis the Kesef, but nonetheless, when it would come to fruit, then the gold could still be a coin. So therefore, I say that Beit Hillel and Beit Shammai are both moda, that if it comes to a tomato, that there for sure you could be mechalal onto the thing that is more coin-like than the tomato, because certainly it's easier to exchange a gold dinner than it is to exchange a red tomato. And so because of that, that becomes now the tiva relative to the pre. But there's no such thing as an absolute pre. That's what Oman Yomar says. V'chad Omar, it's not true. Af peirot al dinarim machloket, it's not true. There's no relative coinage. If you've decided that gold is considered to be a pre, you can't be mechalal one pre on another pre. And if Beit Shammai says that you cannot be mechalal now onto gold, he means you can't be mechalal tomatoes onto gold. Not only can't be mechalal silver onto gold. So, af peirot al dinarim machloket. Es the Gemara, and according to the Man Yomar, af peirot al dinarim machloket, wouldn't it be a bigger chiddush to say that? Why argue about a case of silver and gold? Argue about tomatoes and gold. I mean, that's striking. Nope, you can't be mechal tomatoes on gold, because gold is actually orange. Jizz. That's not a chiddush. So, I mean, wouldn't it make more sense? Ademifuke b'shloim al dinarim. Liflog b'peirot al dinarim. No, because then you would miss out on the other point, you see. If I would argue about peirot al dinarim, so then I would say, okay, peirot al dinarim, I understand. But Sla'im al-Dinarim, over there, relative, how do we know what Beit Hillel was? So maybe the only reason that Beit Hillel would be saying, it's okay to use a gold coin for being mechalal a tomato. That doesn't mean that he would hold it's okay to use a gold coin to be mechalal a silver coin. And that's the chiddush that we want to know. So Sla'im al-Dinarim, maybe he would be made to Beit Hillel to Beit Shammai, that Zohav, in terms of Kesef, is a commodity. And you can't turn Kesef, chilal it, onto a commodity. Therefore, I need, it would be Pira Avivalo Mechalalim, Kamashvam, therefore I need to have the Machlokas as it is in order to know that part. But it's true that there is a bigger Kiddush in terms of the tomato issue, except that's not what we're coming to discuss. We're coming to discuss this Kiddush, the Kiddush Alibid of Beit Hillel, not the Kiddush Alibid of Beit Shammai, that even in terms of tomatoes, you can't be Mechal tomatoes on a gold coin. And that was fun. Amazing. It's beautiful. Hachoshev lishlach yad bepikadon Beit Shammai amrim chayav Beit Hillel amrim eno chayav ad shishlach bo yad shnemar milo shlach yadubim lechet reyehu. Ita techavit venatali men arvi'it venishbara inu mishalem el arvi'it. Higbiya venatali men arvi'it venishbara mishalem demei kula. Binani miladon rabbanon akol dvar pesha Beit Shammai amrim lam shkayav ala makshava kemaseh. Beit Hillel amrim eno chayav ad shishlach bo yad shamir lo shlach yadubim lechet reyehu. Amulam Beit Shammai Beit Hillel Valo Kvar Nemar Kol Dvar Pesha Amulam Beit Hillel Beit Shammai Valo Kvar Nemar Im Lo Shalach Yadom Im Lechad Reheu Im Kein Mata Amud Omar Kol Dvar Pesha She Yochel Ein Li Elohu Amar Lav Dove De Shlucho Minayim Tamud Lomar Kol Dvar Pesha Ita Tachavit Omar Rova. This is only if Nishbara Avalech Mitzah Mishalem Kula My Taima. It was the air that he let in that wrecked it and Geri Didei Udi Anula. When it says Natal, it doesn't mean literally Natal. The given she gbiyali tal av bishalo Natal. But so, in other words, name of kasav shuvah shlichut yadi natzichach yisaron. Not necessarily. Shani yachad the nechale the tavi hakavit kula basis laharivit. Boy Ravashi, and how about a similar case of gbiya arnaki that told him in a dinner mouth? I mean, I understand chamra. We're over there. It's lo minter la agav chamra. But, I mean, Zuzah, theoretically, is Mintar. Or Dilma Shani Nitiru to the Arnake, Minitiru to the dinner, and it's the same as the barrel. It helps. Take it. Adron, lochem avkit. Hazahav konet ha-kesev, ha-kesev eno konet ha-zahav. Ha-nechoshit konet ha-kesev, ha-kesev eno konet ha-nechoshit. Ma'ot ha-ra'ot konot et ha-yafot, ha-yafot enat konot et ha-ra'ot. Ha-simon konet ha-madbea, madbea eno konet ha-simon. Metatlim konin et ha-matbea, matbea eno konin et ha-metatlim. Kol ha-metatlim konim ze et ze. Ketzad? Mashachem min ha-perot v'lo natan lo ma'od, eno yachol lachzor bo. Natan lo ma'od v'lo mashachem min ha-perot, yachol ha-perot, yachol lachzor bo. Aval amru, mi shepara b'yanshe dor ha-mabul, mi dor ha-flaga, hu atid li para, mi mi sheno omei b'dibura. Rabbi Shimon omer, kol she-kesef b'yado, and the mocher got the kesef, only he is Yadu Ala El Yuna. Martin of Rebbe Rebbe Shimon Berei has a half connect a kesef the way we have it. Omar Le Rebbe, Shanita Lano Bialdu Techa, a kesef connect a zahav. Now, in your old age, you're going to change your mind? It has a half connect a kesef. So Bialdu Te, my sovereign, Bzikno Te, my sovereign. Bialdu Te, sovereign, the half of the Choshiv Avitiva, Kaspital of Choshiv is relatively Pira. Because of the Pira Lativa, the Zaknute Savak, the Kaspa, the Chorif Avitiva, the Avadalo Chorif Avipira, because of the Pira Lativa. Omer Vashi, truth is that Keal Dute is more Mistaber. I mean, Iktoni Anachoshit Koneta Kesin Allah. I mean, he Bishkabrit Bishlema, that the first part of the Mishnah actually was that Kaspa Lagabi Dahava is Pira Havi, so now you need to tell me that even so, but it's all relative. The same thing turns in Lagabi Nechoshet into Tiva. Itself is Tiva. So, I mean, certainly Lagabi Nechoshet is going to be Tiva. Because, I mean, Hash Lagabi Dahava, where the Dahava is even Choshevine, it's Tiva. So, certainly Lagabi Nechoshet, where it's not only Choshev, not only Chorev, but also more Choshev. So over there, me boy, it's sakdat hamina hani priti be'atra de segoye inu charifitvei mikaspa. In which case, you would say locally, we should say that it's the tiva. Kamash balan, we don't look locally, but kibidika duchter lo sagibe pirahavi. Because Rav was once Oziv Dinri Mibartid Rabchia, the Sophie Yakar Dinri, Otto the Kamir Rabchia, and Rabchia said, Zir Shlim La Tovin Utikili. He would be Shlim the Havativa Havi, Shapir. Eliam at Pira Havi, so then the whole thing was also, it would be Saw Besaw, the Asur. No, what's talking about? Rav had Dinarim. Give it the Havili Dinarim, Nasikilo Imerlo, Alvini Achiovobini, watch him some after. We said over there, there's no Isra of Saw Besaw. Well, Marova, there's also a Tana in the Brighter, which you'll see, a Tana Sova, that Dahava is Tiva, the way Rebbe thought when he was younger. The Tanya Prutash Amru, Echad Mishmona Bisara Yitaki, Lomayna Afkamina Lakadusha Isha, Iser Echad Miasim Yarba Bidinashok Kesev, Lomayna Afkamina Lameka Kumemka, Dinashok Kesev, Echad Miasim Khamisha Bidinashok Zahab, Lomayna Afkamina Lapidina Ben. So now, I mean, Iyamad Bishlema that he holds that the Zahav is Tiva Havi. So fine, you can be Meshayer, the Kesev, in a standard. We meet it a kids. But if you're going to tell me that the Zahav is Pira Havi, the Bright is absolutely mad. Meshayer Tana Bemidah Doker Vazil? In which case, Zimna de Mahara like Kahana, Vazimna de Mosva, you like Kahana? El Shmamina Tiva Havi Shmamina. Tana Tambe Chamayam Rim Loyaz Adam Slaim Dinarim Zahav, Ubetilo Matirin. And there we have a machloket, Rabbi Yochanan Reish Lakish. Chad amar the machloket is only with slaim al dinarim, but not with peirot al dinarim. The Beit Shammai savri kaspa tiva, the dahava pira, and tiva apira lo mechalalina. Whereas Beit Hillel says, no, actually the kesev is the peirot, the zahav is the tiva, upera tiva mechalalina. Avo peirot al dinarim, that's for sure divrei akor mechalalina, because it's no different than kesev the Beit Hillel. I mean, look, Beit Hillel said that Kesev is considered to be Peirot Lagabi Zahav, right? But nonetheless, certainly, I mean, the norm is to be Mechal Peirot onto Kesev. And so he's made of that Lagabi Pira, it's Tiva Havi. Same thing is true of Zahav, in terms of Beit Shammai. Even though the Zahav Lagabi Kesev is considered to be a Pri, but Lagabi a Pri, it's considered to be Tiva. Whereas the other one says, either Rabbi Yochanan Reish Lakish, even with Peirot HaDinarim is the Machlokas. So, I mean, Lamandi Omer Af, Peirot HaDinarim Machlokas, wouldn't that be a bigger Kiddush? Adam Iflugei B'Sloim HaDinarim, Liflugei Peirot HaDinarim. Iflugei Peirot HaDinarim, Hava Mina Hanimile B'Peirot HaDinarim, Hava B'Sloim HaDinarim, Modelu Beit Hillel Beit Shammai, the Havlaga B'Kas B'Pira Havi. V'lo Mechalalina, Kamashvon, and that's the most important part of the Machlokas. The other part is an adjunct.